Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This morning, VPR and Vermont PBS released the results in the first of two polls being conducted on political and social issues in advance of the primary and general elections. The second poll will be conducted and released in October, but this initial round of results in the VPR Vermont PBS poll are fascinating and illuminating. Now, polls are not elections, and it's important to know the methodology of any poll in considering its results. So today we're going to go over how the poll was conducted, as well as what's in it, how Vermonters say they feel about Governor Phil Scott after last session's contentious budget negotiations and surprising gun control legislation, which of his competitors have they heard of? What are the biggest issues respondents say Vermont faces, and how might that affect the August 14th primary and the November general election? Joining me today to pick the results apart and explain them are two people well-equipped to think all of this through with us. Rich Clark is a professor of political science at Castleton University and the former director of the Castleton Polling Institute. He directed the VPR Vermont PBS poll with Braun Research. Rich Clark, nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Matthew Dickinson is a professor of political science at Middlebury College, where he teaches courses and conducts research into American politics. He wasn't involved in the poll, but has been looking over the results all weekend, and he is going to share his insight with us as well. Professor Dickinson, nice to talk with you.
Great to be with you, Jane.
So, Rich Clark, let's first talk about the methodology, because it really is important, and people should know what they're looking at before they sort of get into the results. So, how did you conduct the poll? What was the sample size? Give us those details.
Okay. Well, the sample size was 600. We actually conducted 603, to be precise, interviews. Half of them by landline, the other half by cell phone.
Significant. So let's pause on that for a moment, because
sure.
Some polls still just do landlines and then you're not getting a representative sample. And so what happens then in terms of extrapolation in polls like that?
Well, what they'll have to do when they do that, they often have to wait the results so that the younger people who are very difficult to reach by landline are weighted up several times and really skews the results. And it kind of brings the final results, anything broken down by age, into question. And any poll that does this interactive voice response where you answer through a push button, they're not allowed to call cell phones. So all of those polls are done through landlines.
While you're talking about that, DJ Lou tweeted us saying, given the known demographics of these two public media organizations, VPR and Vermont PBS, and she says white, upper middle class, and aging, I wonder if the results would be different if a better socioeconomic and age cross-section of Vermont were surveyed. So can you set us straight on how people were chosen for this survey? They're not Vermont PBS or VPR listeners or members.
They are not, no. We use a random digit dial process for the both landline and cell phone sample using the 802 area code, although with billing addresses now we can include some of the cell phones of people who are living in Vermont without an 802 area code. But the fact that VPR and Vermont Public Television supported the thing has nothing to do with our selection, just the name of the poll.
Matt Dickinson, what do you think about how the survey, or rather how the poll, was conducted?
Well, Rich is correct to point out the key here is not who's sponsoring the poll. It's the how the sample from a population was arrived at. And if you look at the demographics, which are provided in the first page, there's a pretty good cross-section matching up pretty well with what we think the demographics of the overall state is. One thing that Rich certainly can speak to is when you get to subpopulations, so you want to talk about the opinions of Republicans, for instance, your margin of error statistically associated with your sample of Republicans is going to be a little bit larger because you simply have fewer Republicans. So just keep that in mind when we start talking about subsamples. There's a little more uncertainty and trying to move from those subsamples to the actual population of, say, Republicans or gun owners in the state.
Yeah, and I want to point out to listeners, you can check out these results for yourself, and you can look through all of them. They're also open source. You're welcome to, as long as you properly credit, you're welcome to use these results in your reporting, in any research that you do. And we hope that you will, because, you know, part of the goal here is to help inform further discussion and further research. So feel free to pick through all of the results. And, you know, so Professor Dickinson is pointing out that there are these breakdowns, and you can look at the results by party affiliation. You can look at the results by age. Professor Clark, librarians at Northern Vermont University tweeted, is there any information available regarding racial or ethnic breakdowns? The results can be seen for other breakdowns like gender, party, region, education. So why not racial or ethnic?
We just don't have that diversity in Vermont. In fact, we don't even use the real estate on the poll to ask about racial or ethnic diversity. The state is so overwhelmingly white. In a sample of 600, we're not going to get enough non-white participation to be able to break it down by that factor.
So you do break it down by gender, by party, by region. You also include how long or what percentage of their lives people have lived in Vermont. Why do that?
I think that's my own personal interest there. We've got a lot of data suggesting that new Vermont transplants tend to be more liberal. The data bear that out time and again. I use percentage of life rather than years in Vermont so that I don't confound those who are younger with those who are newer to the state.
Do you find that interesting or informative, Matt Dickinson?
I do. One of the interesting questions, and Rich might want to speak to this as well, is the gun ownership and your reaction to Phil Scott's embrace of some gun control. And you see differences among those who have lived here the longest. They have slightly higher opposition to the gun laws than transients, people who have moved in more recently. So I think Rich is getting at an important criteria here in distinguishing people who have sort of adopted Vermont as a state versus those who have grown up here. And you saw that at part of the debate here and John Rogers' reaction, sort of a visceral reaction to the passage of gun laws, lamenting the loss of a way of life in Vermont. I think Rich is trying to get at that using that breakdown.
You know, it's interesting because you can look at this as a party thing, that if people who have moved into the state or perhaps moved in by choice as adults, that they may have more likelihood of being on the liberal side of things. That could be one reason why there's softer support for gun control measures, which we should say overall the majority of Vermonters altogether who were polled say they do support Vermont's new gun laws. But you could also look at it as more of a cultural impact or a cultural question and less of a party breakdown one, that Vermonters who have grown up around guns or what people call a hunting culture might have an opinion on guns that sort of bypasses party lines and is more affiliated with how they see their culture. Do you see any of that, Rich Clark?
Well, I think it's important to point out that even among households with gun owners, a majority support for the gun control measures. So it's not gun owners versus non-gun owners breakdown, or it's not that simple, I don't think.
No, nor do I. And in fact, this poll reinforces a previous poll that you conducted for VPR that showed a majority support, a very, very high level of support for what were at the time theoretical gun control laws, that the vast majority of Vermonters, gun owners and non-gun owners, said they would support more gun restrictions.
Primarily the universal background checks.
Right. So it's interesting to see now that they're not theoretical, how has that changed? So how has it changed from the 2016 poll to the 2018 poll?
Well, I think now it's back reflective. Now they're looking at a law which probably went beyond what they thought a law might at that time. And looking backwards, having that perspective, saying that they support this overwhelmingly. Those who tended to support the legislation also tend to have good approval or high approval of Governor Scott.
And listeners, I'm going to go through some of the stats here, and I recognize that a lot of numbers flying at you can be a little disorienting. So, again, feel free to go and parse the results yourself. But from the poll, 67% of Vermonters completely or generally favor the new gun laws. 25% generally or completely oppose them. Women have a higher rate of approval of the new gun laws. 79% of women approve of the laws, 55% of men. When it comes to party support, 43% of Republicans favor these new laws, 52% of Republicans oppose them. And then when you break it down by region, the highest support for the new gun laws is in Chittenden County, and the lowest support is in northern Vermont. So it's interesting to see not just that overall support, but how it breaks down. And as Rich Clark and Matt Dickinson have pointed out, also depends on how long you've lived in the state of Vermont. Do the gun questions help inform you in any way on where you think Vermonters might be going in their political choices this August, Professor Dickinson?
Potentially. The fact that Phil Scott has pushed a policy that was highly controversial at the time, a series of sort of restrictions on gun ownership, but which has achieved at least plurality support and possibly even majority support, depending on how you break the question down. I think that bodes well for him, and it suggests that he understands public opinion and was willing to lead on an issue where, frankly, there really wasn't a lot of a groundswell of opinion on this. We're a low-crime state, very low gun violence, and yet he took the initiative on this. Having said that, the one caution I would point out is before we go to the general election, he has to get through a primary, and primaries can be tricky because they're often low turnout, and often people who are strong single-issue individuals are more motivated to vote. And so I think he does have to be careful that even though the gun law is broadly popular, in a primary that attracts 20,000 people, if 7,000 of them are gun owners, I mean, there's a potential there for a hiccup, and he certainly has to be aware of that.
Sure, there is a primary, but one of the questions that was also asked is, have you ever heard of these candidates? And it was done for many different candidates. It was done for all the Democratic candidates running for governor and, of course, the challengers to Phil Scott, including Keith Stern. And 72% of respondents said they had never heard of Keith Stern, who's running as a Republican against Governor Phil Scott. But Rich Clark, there's also a lack of name recognition for the Democrats, who one of whom at least will be challenging Phil Scott in the general election in November. It seems like a pretty high level of non-awareness of these candidates.
Yeah, and you know, it's last time we had a an off-year election with an incumbent governor, the primaries, we had a 9% turnout. So we're talking about a low turnout election coming up. There's not a lot of attention being paid to it among the public, as demonstrated by the number that haven't heard of any of these candidates. But back to the Professor Dickinson's point, in the primary, those who completely and generally oppose the background check have very high opinions of Keith Stern. They're far more likely to give a favorable opinion. Now, they may not be many, but in a low primary turnout, there's at least reason to be concerned.
Let's go to Tim, who's calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Tim, not Jim. I just had a quick question regarding the survey, though.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
As a gun owner myself and someone that enjoys recreational shooting in the shooting events, as sporting clays, et cetera, you don't hear very much discussion about support for our shooting ranges. And I guess my feeling is, outside of the political realm of this discussion, is that I'd like to see if you're going to pay this much attention to regulation of firearms, that there also be some recognition, at least, that you have to acknowledge that there's a lot of guns out there, and that if people don't have a safe venue in which to use them, there's going to be more opportunity for misuse, and that there is an existing list of ranges that are regulated, that have operating hours, and that go to long lengths to provide a safe venue for people to use guns for sporting purposes.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for your call. Thanks for pointing that out. Rich Clark, I don't think you did ask about membership at gun ranges or access to gun ranges, but it's interesting because information like this, which did include how many households have guns from the people who were surveyed, might help inform someone like Tim who wants to then advocate for support of something like safe gun ranges.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are hard numbers to get outside of surveys, the number of gun owner households. So the poll does highlight that.
It strikes me that there was a little bit, it looks like, of perhaps a decline in the number of households who report that they have guns, that they, either the respondent, him or herself, is a gun owner or there is a gun in the house. Is that statistically significant between 2016 and 2018?
No, it did fall within the margin of error.
Okay, so it's still fairly similar, we think, that the number of households in Vermont who say there's a gun in this household.
And it's just about where the GSS had put us back in, like, I think 2014.
And it's about half, right? About half of Vermont households.
Yeah, just under.
Matt Dickinson, what else do you look at in these poll results that you want to highlight that people should know about or that you think are interesting or surprising?
Well, you mentioned the lack of name recognition among the Democratic candidates. For what it's worth, for governor, they're all highly unknown. So that's a relatively fluid field there, and it'll be interesting to see who emerges. One thing that did strike me is the number of people who claimed not to have an opinion or not sure what their opinion was regarding Phil Scott, roughly a third of those. I'm not quite sure how to interpret that, but after serving almost the full term here, you would expect more people to have an opinion, or at least to state an opinion, either positive or negative. Now, to be clear, he has both positive favorability ratings and approval ratings, but still, it suggests there are some people out there who haven't quite decided what they think about him. And if I'm Phil Scott, I want to drive that uncertainty down as we head into the primaries.
Yeah, overall, 41% of respondents say they approve of Phil Scott, 28% say they disapprove, and as you said, Matt Dickinson, 29% say they're not sure. They don't have a set feeling on whether they approve or disapprove. And the highest disapproval is with Republicans. 35% of Republicans say they disapprove of Phil Scott. That might be a little bit surprising. You know, it's been a pretty contentious legislative session, but is that surprising to you, Matt Dickinson?
Again, it is. I think if I'm Phil Scott, my strategy is if I'm a Republican and I disapprove of you because perhaps of your stance on guns, I'm gambling that disapproval does not mean you're going to vote for the Democrat in the general election. So again, the real worry if you're Scott is, do you go for my opponent in the primary, which is dominated by Republican voters? So that is a potential warning sign. It means that Scott has to take care not to lose his base, his party base, in his effort to sort of move to the middle and appeal to independents, which are a significant constituent in Vermont. He's got to get through that primary first.
Yeah, and his highest approval comes from independents. 50% of independents polled say they support Phil Scott. On our website, New Bob 2 writes, as a Democrat who believes the Trump administration is basically ending the United States, I nevertheless will vote for Phil Scott's reelection. I think he should be rewarded for his courageous stance on gun control. And let's go to Bob calling in from Bennington. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
One of the questions I have is that when you write statistical analysis and questions, when you write them, you can make those questions come out with any answer you want just because of the way you write them. So I haven't actually seen your survey, but the question is your survey skewed simply by the way you ask the questions?
Thanks for that that question, Bob. I appreciate it because, you know, Rich Clark, it really does matter what language you use as you ask the question. So how do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. We test all of our questions to try to eliminate as much bias as possible. In addition to that, VPR has posted all of the question wording. So it's the precise question wording is up on the website, so you can make some judgments for yourself. You know, it's difficult to write the perfectly unbiased question, but we make every effort we can to make sure that it is as neutral as possible.
How do you test? You say you test all the questions to try to eliminate bias. How do you do that?
We use this process. We call it cognitive interviews, where we ask people to think aloud as they hear a question and tell us, you know, what's going through their mind as they answer it. And just using that to try to get a sense of making sure they understand the question as we're asking it, and if they detect any sort of bias, that they'll tell us right there.
Matt Dickinson, when you look through the questions and the poll results, what questions do you have or hesitations about things like bias or sample size or margin of error?
This isn't a criticism of the poll, but it is something to keep in mind. Rich is quite right to focus on question wording. The other thing we often are very careful about is question sequence. So we know, for instance, if you begin a poll by asking people what is the most important issue facing the state of Vermont, and then you ask them subsequently, do you approve or disapprove of the job of Phil Scott is doing, many people will use that first question as a cue when they evaluate Phil Scott. So if they say the most important issue in this state is taxes, then asked whether they approve of Scott, they're going to think about Scott in the context of what he's done on taxes. The one thing I look at here, and I'm curious to see what Rich says, the second question asks voters what they think of Donald Trump. Not surprisingly, a significant number of Vermonters do not approve of him. But if you look at Republicans with leaners, he actually has strong support. And then you go from Donald Trump to asking about Phil Scott. It raises the question, and again, this is not necessarily a weakness of the poll. It's just something we need to be sensitive about. It raises the question, how much of the response to Scott is cued off the question about Donald Trump among, say, Republican voters?
Rich Clark, what do you think?
Well, I think Matt hit it right on the nail. Looking at the attitudes about Trump, those who have approval of Trump tended to have specifically among Republicans, tended to have a harsher opinion of Scott. Those who oppose the Republicans who don't approve of President Trump were overwhelmingly in approval of Phil Scott.
Some polls move the questions around so different respondents will get the questions in different order. Why sure. didn't you do that, Rich?
Well, on the most important problem, while I don't disagree with what Professor Dickerson says about the order and the issue shaping how they're going to respond to the candidates, to put that question later in the poll risks tainting that question by what issues that we've already highlighted as important issues. So it's a real difficult thing to figure out where to put those sorts of questions. We do mix up order for the candidates so that we're not asking them in the same order every time, because we know there's some fatigue in asking about the approval. So those were all rotated so that everybody gets to be first once and last. And then the policy questions, we didn't differentiate the order, but we tried to set them up so that with the awareness of what preceded each one.
Let's go to Margaret, who's calling in from Westford. Hi, Margaret. Go right ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering if you could please tell me what percentage of the 603 people interviewed were from Chittenden County. And my second question would be, if you removed the Chittenden County respondents from the poll in regard to the gun legislation, what did those results then look like? And I'll take my response on the radio. Have a good afternoon.
Margaret, thanks for the question. And, you know, Rich Clark, it really is interesting to look at the breakdown because you do break it down by geographic area. And I'll give a couple of statistics and then turn it over to you. But, you know, it looks like for most Vermonters, the economy, jobs, cost of living is the biggest issue across the state. And there's not a ton of difference, geographically speaking. But there are differences in people who say education is a big issue. Central Vermont has the biggest percentage of people saying education is a top issue. Marijuana is the top issue for 4% of Chittenden County residents, 1% elsewhere. Chittenden County also says ranks environmental issues higher than other parts of the state. So what about Margaret's question, Rich?
Well, she asked what percentage of the our respondents are from Chittenden County, and that actually matches the state's percentage. It's about 25%. We had stratified the sample so that we represented all the counties proportionately. But if we took them out of the the question on guns, you'll see that in all of the regions, and we don't have enough sample size in to do every county at a county level, but all of the regions still have majority support of the legislation. The lowest being northern Vermont, which is the Northeast Kingdom and all the counties north of Chittenden, and that's still 58% saying that they have either completely or generally favor the legislation.
What do you think about that geographic breakdown, Matt Dickinson? It's interesting to look at. You know, people often say Chittenden County is really nice. It's so close to Vermont. Does this inform us in any way about the differences between the regions and among the regions?
I think Rich is exactly right to think about breaking the subsamples down to see whether there's regional differences. And it is interesting that on some issues, you don't see those regional differences. Gun control, for instance, there's general support. And others like education, you do. So it gets to one of the difficulties. I mean, Rich can speak to the cost of this particular survey, but it is costly to put out surveys. You only have so much question space. You have respondents whose time is limited, and you just simply can't ask questions on everything. But you could think of questions that might have bigger regional implications, dealing with environmental policies or something like that, that just weren't asked on this particular survey. Mm. But as far as I can see, you know, there's no surprises in the breakdown by region and in responses to the issue-specific questions. We might want to talk a little bit about the state government versus local government. That's not so much region-specific as it is. I think there's a breakdown. Well, it may have a region-specific aspect to it, but it is interesting to see that who's question 21 when it comes to managing the cost per student for Vermont schools, who can do a better job, state government or local government. There's strong support for local government, and that's a potential issue, a problem, I think, for the Scott campaign and a potential opening for some of the Democratic candidates who have run. And in fact, I think not just the Democratic candidates, but some of Scott's rivals have talked about the emphasizing local school control.
Hmm. You know, we have a question about that. Andy in Brattleboro says, does the poll ask about school consolidation through Act 46? How is this major reorganization of schools viewed around the state? Rich Clark?
Well, no, not this time around. We have the approval of the or who do you think can do a better job at managing the cost. But we did ask about Act 46 in the 2016 summer poll. So those results are still, I think, available.
When you talk about the differences, I mean, we are doing another poll in October, and some of the questions will be focused, of course, on general election candidates. But those issue-specific questions, are they likely to change? Do we know yet what the questions are for October?
No, I think that's mostly up to for Vermont Public Television and Vermont Public Radio.
We got a note from Chris who says, I think VPR and our local news outlets should be taking this story as a reflection on where journalists are focusing their attention and on what's being missed rather than on an ignorant public. And I think Chris is looking at, for example, the lack of name recognition of the candidates, and goes on to say, candidate name recognition is something our news outlets need to take ownership on. And let's go, it may be the same Chris, but let's go to Chris who's calling in from Dummerston. Hi, Chris. Go right ahead.
Hi, yeah, this is the same Chris.
Excellent.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got a follow-up?
Yes, I just wanted to say that, Jane, I find your interviews that you've done with the candidate so far to be fantastic, but I'm at the same time finding that to be the only source that I have for hearing from these candidates directly besides their websites. And, of course, their website isn't especially helpful if I don't know their name. So I'm just curious if this has caused either at Vermont Public Television or VPR any sort of inward looking about even just rearranging your own website to have like a section for campaign 2018. I'm finding that I'd have to do a search
yeah.
If I wanted to find
some of these things.
Chris, I appreciate the question, and I actually asked our news director, Sarah Ashworth, to come in just to answer your question on that, because I can certainly tell you what I know, but she's directing all of our coverage on this. So, Sarah Ashworth, welcome to the studio.
Jane.
And what about Chris's question? There's a lack of name recognition. Does this change? Do these poll results change how we think about our news coverage and what we might want to focus on?
Well, we do have plans in the works. We do sort of look at the next primary and then the general election. We will have built out digital guides for voters. Those things are always in the works. It was a surprise, I think, to us just how low name recognition is of those candidates. And I think in the newsroom, it's not going to change how we think about covering candidates. We sort of see our job as journalists much the same way every election that comes around. I looked at some of the issues and I think thought, you know, we should not lighten up on stories about opioid addiction. You know, that's touching a lot of people in the state. And so those things I thought were really a good reminder to think these are important issues. Vermonters are saying this. We can't forget about this issue.
And maybe less on marijuana. Sounds like not very many Vermonters think that's a top issue.
Yeah, that seems to be a little bit. Yeah, July 1 happened. This is where we're at now. We'll see, I guess, next legislative session around taxes and regulation. But for now, yeah.
Sarah, thanks. I appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Looking at the results, we had some people on Twitter telling us that what they thought is the buried lead is the fact that almost half of Vermonters say they know someone who has dealt with opiate addiction, and that really is a very serious concern. Matt Dickinson, something that you see reflected in Vermont as well, that, you know, opiates and opiate addiction is a big issue?
Yes, and the governor has come out strongly on pushing policies to address that. But I think that's an issue that cuts across party lines. I don't see it's an issue of interest to voters. It's not necessarily an issue that is going to determine the direction of the vote one way or the other. I think all our elected officials recognize that we have a problem there. But it is interesting. It's the third most highly cited issue in terms of the most important problem facing the state of Vermont.
Rich Clark, just remind us, another poll coming out in October.
That's correct. Yeah, and so we'll be focusing mostly on the general election, but there'll be issue questions as well.
Rich Clark is a professor of political science at Castleton University. He's the former director of the Castleton Polling Institute, and he directed the VPR Vermont PBS poll with Braun Research. Rich, thanks very much for talking with us about it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Matt Dickinson is a professor of political science at Middlebury College. Matt, I really appreciate your unbiased and uninvolved approach here and able to look at these questions with us. Thank you for your time today.
Always glad to participate, Jane.
And listeners, you can follow all of VPR's poll coverage at vpr.net. You'll also find all of the poll results and any kind of information that you can get about the poll. You're welcome to use. There's some rules about sourcing, but we would like this to be used and utilized by Vermonters and Vermont journalists. So sally forth.